everyone. Welcome to this week's ASF Weekly Science Podcast. Today is Monday, March 9th, and I'm Alicia Halliday, Chief Science Officer of the Autism Science Foundation. Lots and lots of news this week. COVID-19 seems to be on the top of every headline. But first, I want to hear from you about the topics you want to hear about on this podcast. We posted a request for you about all the different topics you want to hear about on social media. In the immediate future, for example, I've invited an expert on suicide to provide an update on new research and understanding the link between autism and suicide and new measurement tools. That's because you asked for it. Also, it's about time for an update on those CDC prevalence numbers, so I'll be summarizing those. Come at me with your thoughts and ideas. You're the listeners, and really, you guys are in charge. I'm just here to take up space between the longer podcasts on murder mysteries and reality TV. And no judgment there, those are the ones I listen to. There was a study this week that was highlighted in the media. The press office at UCSF was really hustling to get it out there, and I saw it everywhere. I did want to explain it a little bit. It's an interesting and provocative study, and it's also fascinating to me which research the media latches onto compared to ones that don't get ever mentioned. Anyway, this was the study, I think I already said, it was out of the University of California, San Francisco, which is one of the premier research institutions in the entire world. There are a host of genetic manipulations involved in the experiment, but the goal was to see if manipulations and a protein called tau could alleviate seizures and autism-relevant behaviors in mice models of ASD. So the investigators crossed different genetic models of ASD with strains of mice that showed differing levels of expression of the protein called tau. In the long run, you can understand how if they found that manipulating levels of tau increased or decreased the presence of autism-related behaviors in mice and related biology, how maybe tau could be a treatment target. Okay, so let's take a break here. What the fresh hell is tau? Do you recognize that, tau? Well, tau is one of the proteins, when expressed too much, is part of the cause of Alzheimer's disease. Alzheimer's disease is multifactorial, but one thing that happens or can happen in Alzheimer's disease is that tau, which is a protein that helps put together microtubules, which I'll explain in a minute, it gets into excess and it accumulates in neurons. And it actually causes those microtubules, which bring nutrients from one end of the neuron to another, to be tangled up. And when I say tangled up, I mean like my daughter Sarah's hair in the morning after swim when she refuses to let me condition it. Think dreadlocks. There's a YouTube video out there where a woman untangles her dreadlocks after 2 years. It's fascinating. And I say this because I imagine that that's what these tangles look like. These are the tau tangles in the brain during Alzheimer's disease. Not that, just to make it clear, dreadlocks are linked to Alzheimer's. So there is a link between tau and Alzheimer's, but it isn't like tau's the only thing causing Alzheimer's or that any level of tau is what leads to these tangles. It's really high, almost toxic levels that accumulate and cause the microtubules to tangle up. Tau is an Alzheimer's relevant protein, but that's the link to Alzheimer's, and that's it. There are some studies in the brains of people with ASD that link other autism relevant molecules to both ASD and Fragile X syndrome. It seems to be too much of this protein that's related to ASD and Fragile X. So I'm not saying that there's no link between Alzheimer's and ASD, because there seems to be on multiple levels. But I am saying that the media overstepped when they used this study as some sort of definitive link. So anyway, mitigating these tau proteins could alleviate Alzheimer's, but that's not what this podcast is interested, is it? In fact, reduction in tau protein does reduce some of the autism-related behaviors in 2 of the 3 mouse models in this study. So a reduction in tau led to improvement in autism-related behaviors in mice. One of these mouse mutants was a gene called SCN1A. This is actually not really a model of autism. It's a model of Dravet syndrome. Kids with Dravet syndrome show intense seizures. The other mouse model was catnap, which also has seizures and also is an autism-relevant gene. You may have heard about SCN1A because it's SCN2A, which is a different mutation, and it's really more closely linked to ASD than SCN1A. This is one of those genes that those tiny changes in where exactly on the receptor the protein is and what it affects really makes a difference. So one of the models isn't even as closely related to ASD as the others. The one model that didn't seem to be receptive to changes in tau was something called a SHANK3 knockout, which is a model of Phelan-McDermid syndrome. We'll talk about why there were no differences in manipulating tau levels in this knockout later. I was a bit disappointed that the media treated this as a miracle that reversed all symptoms of ASD in mice because, of course, it didn't. It's never going to be that simple. There will never be one thing that reverses all of autism. It's just too complex. But it did change some behaviors like reduction of self-grooming and an improvement in ultrasonic vocalizations. I do want to give the authors of this study a shout out for at least using some measures of behavior that are related in some way to ASD or the mechanisms behind ASD. They don't always do this, people. The other thing that moderating tau did, which is really interesting, is to reduce megencephaly in the SCN1A mutant mice. These mice, like some people with autism and some other animal models, show bigger heads compared to those without the mutation. It's called megencephaly because they have a bigger brain. It does affect a small subset of people with ASD, especially in those with something else called a P10 mutation. Okay, I'm taking a breath here, and I'm going to acknowledge that I've been throwing a lot of gene names and a lot of molecules at me like crazy. So I'm going to just get to the point. Reducing this tau protein changes autism-relevant behaviors and also alleviates these big heads in certain genetic models. Not all genetic models, but some genetic models, especially the ones with seizures and also the ones with a disruption of a specific biochemical pathway that has a name, but I'm not going to tell you the name because I know your heads are already about ready to explode. What the study does show is a link between tau to autism behaviors and anatomical differences in some genetic models, then suggests that the link is because of a distinct biochemical pathway, which, headline here, could be the target of pharmacological interventions. Now, again, not even all the genetic models of ASD have alterations in this pathway. So again, this will never be a one-size-fits-all treatment for ASD, but it could be one of many in the future. What I haven't mentioned yet, but promised to mention, so I'm doing it now, is why SHANK3 mutants, which are models of Phelan-McDermid syndrome, are not affected by changes in this tau protein. They don't have the same alteration in the biochemical pathway, so changes in tau probably wouldn't work as well in people with PMS. Now, when I say PMS, I mean Phelan-McDermid syndrome, not the other PMS. So what does, in fact, influence behavior in SHANK3 mice? Another study this week looked at another mutation within a mutation where a specific neuron subtype was altered in the SHANK3 knockout mice. SHANK3 knockout mice show heightened sensitivity to touch, just like some people with autism. When you brush their whiskers, their brains light up like the Christmas tree at Rockefeller Center. This is specific to SHANK3 mice, but the concept of hypersensitivity to sensory stimuli is common across some of these genetic knockouts. In this mouse, however, it wasn't changes in tau protein. It was a particular type of neuron which transmits GABA to be the cause of this hypersensitivity. The brain is a complicated thing, and there are actually brain cells that moderate the activity of other brain cells called interneurons. They're the traffic light of our brain, telling cells to slow down. Or they could be me in about 20 years, sitting on my lawn, yelling at cars passing by, "Slow down, why are you going so fast?" As it turns out, in these SHANK3 knockout mice, sensory stimuli actually turns neurons on too much and then turns off the cells that are supposed to slow them down too much. So they actually have no yellow light to tell these excitatory neurons to calm the F down. To Guopeng Feng's lab, who published this really elegant study explaining what moderate hypersensitivity in a mouse model of autism, I'm sorry I reduced it to me sitting on my lawn yelling at passing cars, and I apologize. But this does illustrate the idea of excitation inhibition. Some genetic knockout models of autism and some people with autism have too much activity. Their brains are just turned on too much in certain regions. And the mechanisms that are supposed to tell them to slow down or to stop firing so often are disrupted as well. So these brains are just in an altered state of just being on. So you can see why pharmacological agents, which may alter the network of proteins in this GABA receptor that is altered in SHANK3 knockout mice, might be a good therapeutic. And I can promise you that certain industry partners are looking at this as a target. Thank you for listening this week, and I will talk to you next week. And I hope to have either a podcast on suicide or something else. Please, again, come at me. I'm open to your different ideas. Thanks for listening.